What's in a name? For critics of the latest edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5 for short, well, it's everything. The manual is created by the American Association of Psychiatry, and the common terms and standard criteria in what's named or what's been dropped can have a lot to do with treatment and possibly the way treatment is funded. But psychiatrist and university professor Ike Ahmed says critics are stirring up a controversy where none really exists. Dr. Ahmed is the outgoing president of the Hawaii Medical Psychiatric Association, and he joins us by phone now. Good morning.
Good morning, and aloha to you and your listeners.
Looking at the DSM-5, it's the latest iteration. The last one came out in 1999 when life looked a little bit different than it looks now. We've learned a lot since 1999. What are the key changes for you that represent that shift?
The key changes is that I think there's not been a major paradigm shift. However, there are changes in the way diagnoses are listed and some of the diagnostic names have been changed. And I think that's one of the key changes. And the way the documentation of diagnosis in DSM-5 is a little bit different than DSM-4. So while there's not been a major paradigm shift, there's a slightly different approach to try and move to what we call a more of a spectrum of disorders rather than clear-cut distinctions between some of the disorders. So I think there's a slight tendency to move on what we call looking at dimensions of disorders rather than just looking at purely each disorder is completely separate.
This is a guidebook for clinicians, and certainly having standard language is important, but that standard language doesn't necessarily mean that you have correct assessment.
Absolutely. I think one has to look at the DSM as a more of something that helps the clinicians communicate with each other. So if I'm going to say that somebody has a major depressive disorder, another clinician understands what I mean. So one thing we look for is to try and look at reliability of diagnosis so that two clinicians can generally examine the same person and come to similar conclusions as far as diagnosis go. However, what happens once the diagnosis is made for further assessment and treatment is not addressed in the DSM-5.
But having the language, as you mentioned, that you talk to each other and you understand each other also means understanding clearly what that language is meant to say or to do. There have been parts of the DSM-5 that have been dropped or that have been, renamed. In so doing that, is the understanding still very clear what you're talking about?
I think the understanding hopefully will be clear once the clinicians get to go the DSM-5. As you know, it just was released very recently. I believe it was released on May 18th. That was the first release, and then it was started being distributed about May 21st. So a lot of clinicians haven't seen it yet. I think the effort was, took several years, I think about 10 years or more, and with including some field trials and getting feedback from the community of clinicians in mental health, and revisions have been made accordingly. So hopefully this will be better than DSM-4 in the sense of it will be consistent with the current scientific understanding of these disorders. And so I think overall it will be, from my perspective, this is my opinion only, is that it's better than DSM-4 and more consistent with the current understanding of disorders.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things that changed. There was the dropping of the bereavement exclusion.
Absolutely right. The bereavement exclusion before, you had to wait for about 2 months before you could diagnose somebody as having a major depression after death of a loved one. Right now that exclusion has been removed, and the thinking behind that was that, people can indeed have very significant depressive symptoms even before 2 months, and the question is, would they then get appropriate treatment? So it was felt that based on the current understanding of depression and how it manifests, that people can be depressed before the 2 months, so that's why the bereavement exclusion was removed.
The term Asperger's syndrome was also dropped, and it's just now the autism spectrum. ADHD extended into adulthood, and the way in which we regard PTSD was also changed by the way it's listed in the DSM-5. All good changes, according to you?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I think, for example, autism spectrum disorder subsumes what is known as Asperger's, because there's some inconsistency in the way those diagnoses were applied. So most people who are diagnosed with Asperger's, if not all, will fall under autism spectrum disorder. And we feel that there's an overlapping of symptoms across these disorders. So I think it made sense to, based on our current understanding of autism and its other disorders such as Asperger's, that they are fall on the spectrum. And this was across, seen across DSM-5 to looking at spectrum. It's the same thing, I think, with PTSD, that, you know, for example, I think with military soldiers, you know, the issue of responding with fear is not necessarily seen in military folks who are trained to respond to combat situations in a different way. So I think it was looking at making the criteria more consistent with what reality is and what we know from research.
There was also the criticism that somehow in naming disorders and in changing the way in which the language was meant to specify certain things, that maybe there might be more of a medicalization of those disorders or more of an impulse to treat with meds. How do you stand on that?
Right. I think it's an understandable sort of criticism. I think the biggest issue, I think, has been with things like major depressive disorder, removing the bereavement exclusion. And the concern was that, you know, people will then be put on medication. I think the DSM-5 doesn't take a stance whether they should be treated with medication. As a matter of fact, a lot of people with major depression should be treated with psychotherapy, like cognitive behavior therapy. So it doesn't specify what the treatment should be, but it's an understandable concern. On the other hand, there was a disorder, a lot of children were being diagnosed with bipolar disorder when they had behavioral problems. And I think that there's been a new diagnosis added, you know, which has to do with disruptive mood dysregulation disorder. And the treatment, there would be more behavioral rather than medication. So actually it might reduce the use of medication in children.
And finally, Dr. Ahmed, is this just sort of been a tempest in a teapot about the controversy surrounding the DSM-5? And do psychiatrists, at least some of your fellows that you've talked with, really care?
I think it's been more of a tempest in a teapot. Part of it is that there was a lot of unknowns about DSM-5, what was going to be in it and what wasn't. There was a certain element of secrecy during the deliberative process as the DSM-5 was deliberated before it came out. So I think people were imagined a lot that was not necessarily there. My colleagues, I think, have taken a more of a wait-and-see attitude.
Okay.
So I think...
we're going to wait and see then.
Yes, we certainly will.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And you. Dr. Ike Ahmed is a faculty psychiatrist at Tripler Army Medical Center. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences and clinical professor of psychiatry and geriatric medicine. He's also the outgoing president of the Hawaii Medical Psychiatric Association. And you can see the new DSM-5 for yourself on hpr2.org.